A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and joining me as always...
Good afternoon, video games. It's Ben Vanel here. Thanks, Tommy. And joining us as always, rounding out the three of us...
Good night, sweetheart. It's Adam Knox here. We're technically out of lockdown. Hooray.
Yes.
So now we don't have to do podcasts not in real life anymore. Hooray.
Hooray. Oh,
we do. Yep. We're still on the internet, baby.
Yeah. Not allowed at the crib, so we still got to be using the internet to record. Last time we came out of lockdown, the gyms weren't allowed to reopen for a couple of weeks, and I saw a lot of gym owners that I follow on Instagram getting very radicalized by these rules and going, this is bullshit, the government doesn't respect the gyms. So I think this time it's podcasters' turns. If you just started seeing all the podcasters of Melbourne up in arms over these draconian measures.
I mean, some of them.
Yeah.
Some of
them
are.
True. True. Dan Andrews doesn't care about content.
Did you know that in England, a gym is called a Tim? That's a joke about The Office.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
Yes. Gareth.
Ben, would you have picked that out without the postscript?
Yeah, I was going to make the same joke, but I couldn't figure out how to phrase it. I was thinking about the Pams are also really annoyed by that or something, you know, something office related. Yeah.
Right.
I go to the gym at dawn or I go to the Tim at Pam.
Yes. Yes.
Boy won't be
the
happy.
British.
Or Ron.
Speaking of the British,
a news story from this week that Final Fantasy 16... They've done things a bit of a different way around. They've recorded all the English language audio for the game before they've done the Japanese stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty unusual because it's a Japanese game, and I tell you what, Final Fantasy 16 and 14 kind of being talked about in the news and stuff at the moment. Fuck, it's confusing. They've really gotten high enough that these numbers are crazy looking.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
But 16 is the next one, the single player one that'll be coming out in, you'd assume, ages from now, because they just finished doing the English performance capture and voice recording, and then are going to do the Japanese and other languages later on. So the English one is the base, which is surprising.
Yeah, does that mean, I mean, fuck, this might sound like a stupid question, but does that mean the narrative is written by an English-speaking person? You know, like, what does that mean?
I don't know. So,
if it's written in Japanese by a Japanese person, as I would have assumed it was, right? Like, I don't know if that's dumb as well.
Yeah, but it's translated, yeah.
It's usually localization is a separate process. Like, it's a different team altogether. So, yeah.
A lot of games these days do work on that stuff in parallel now. Japanese games will work on the English and the Japanese scripts and everything sort of together. They get still a translation team or whatever to come in, but they're doing it as the game is being made.
As the game's being made. They're getting like early access to the scripts and whatnot because, in a game like Persona or any of those like big JRPGs, there's so much text and it still does happen where I think because Persona did take a long time to get localized.
Yeah, Persona Strikers as well took like a year, but the Yakuza games, they're a parody now,
right? Yes, true.
A bunch of others as well. Hey, get my brain to form a list to then run through. It's not going to happen. So, but there's more. But apparently, they used English actors for motion capture in Final Fantasy XII for Balthier, who was like, I think he was the sort of like kind of how do you describe a person who's like, I'm the roguish English,
aloof,
a fop,
like a aloof fop,
Yeah, okay.
Not the words I'd have found, but thank you for helping me out.
Love but, Will Anderson's podcast, a loof fop. Shout out to Will.
So, yeah, it has been done before, I guess, but this, yeah, it's cool.
I mean, it's very like the from what we've seen in the trailer and also from a lot of the other Final Fantasy games, they are very like, it's very like kind of English mythology kind of stuff, isn't it, right? It's
many,
like ancient, it's medieval sort
yeah.
of, yeah.
Different ones have different things, but yes, it seems like this one is going back to that type of Final Fantasy where it's drawing from, you know, Japanese interpretations of Western mythology.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is cool always to me. Also, it is a bit like, I mean, from as someone who's going to play it in English and only knows English and that's the only language I'll ever learn, and if they come over here.
You actually know, Nox, you know American English and British English, so that's two languages.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, and ahoy.
Oh, yeah, I forgot it was Speak Like a Pirate Day.
But it might, like, I don't know if this will have, like, it won't have that thing like Ghost of Tsushima had where it felt weird playing it, like where the English lip syncing didn't match up with the Japanese voice acting that made that game a little better. I don't think this one suffers from not having Japanese.
No,
voice
not
acting.
At all. I mean, the that Japanese audience is like a huge base of the people playing this. So that stuff will all be, yeah, I would imagine synced. But it is interesting when you see the little, like, so not to, we'll talk a bit more about this game later on, but the great Ace Attorney Chronicles there's the first bit of that is a case where you are talking about a visiting British professor who's been murdered, and it's all about how Japan and Britain have just struck this, you know, big trade deal and all this kind of stuff. And it's funny, anytime you see Japanese people speaking in these games and it's translated into English, but it's, you know, it's meant to be they're speaking Japanese. And there's a bit where one of the characters says, and this is written out, he's like, oh yes, you know, England's great, we should all be here in Japan, we should be paying more attention to the English language. It's very important to us too. And then this is phonetically written out, speaku English. And just reading this, you look at it and you go, this looks weird, but I guess in the Japanese that would have been written out like phonetically to be like, he's talking Japanese and then at the end he's saying, he's the thing is meant to be, he's doing a sort of a botched job of like,
right,
you know, sucking up and speaking the language in front of this British person who's in the court with them. But it's like, just reading that out, it was like, God, this loses a lot in the translation. Not only does it lose a lot, it actually looks quite problematic seeing it written out on the screen.
There's always an argument between, I forget what the two different types are called, but where you're doing like a literal translation of Japanese to English or doing the thing of like localizing it. I guess it's translation versus localization.
Yeah, or transliteration, I think. Is that the word? I've heard that word before. It could be that, yeah.
Maybe. Whatever
but
it
I
is.
But I mean, having spent time in Japan, like they do sound out and speak some English words that way. Sometimes there aren't Japanese versions of English language words. Yeah, so...
Yeah.
And it is, you know, Japan-sized sometimes.
Well, it's like
not
us
in an
rendezvous.
Offensive way like that, but...
Yeah, we do that with heaps of words. English is like half other words where we've gone like, yeah, we'll have rendezvous. Fuck
exactly.
off.
Exactly. lot of fucking French. Lot of Latin, obviously. It's German roots. It's all everything.
But anyway, so Final Fantasy 16 is... So apparently, generally with projects like this, when all the voice acting and the motion capture is done, you're looking at yourself being within the year of release.
Okay.
So the fact that is not all done yet does mean that... Because that's, I think, like Q1 2022 type of thing.
It won't be done, yeah.
I would imagine. But I'm looking forward to
playing.
Have they
dated that at all? They haven't said anything about roughly when that's meant to come out, have they?
Just, yeah, like first quarter of 2022, I think, is like their, you know, from some earnings call, here's roughly. I don't think they've committed themselves to a proper release window yet, though. And you'd imagine it'd be probably late next year.
Right.
Would be my guess.
Yeah. But I don't know. Earliest, like mid. Earliest, like July, June, July or something.
Let's guess.
If everything goes perfectly. Okay.
I reckon the 9th of September 2022.
I reckon August 2nd.
Yep.
Yeah.
May 23.
Now, what rules are we doing here? Is this Price is Right rules?
2021.
Holy shit.
Oh, okay. Are you sure, Tommy? Like, let's just be sure you want to lock that in.
No, it'll just, you'll turn up on the e-store tomorrow and it'll just be on there and you'll be like, what? I missed this announcement. Oh. Came out May 23rd. What?
We probably should have played that for the podcast. That's...
So there's been a lot of Final Fantasies, Nox, but there has not been as many Final Fantasies as there have been Olympics games. And we, three little cunnies, took a trip together, didn't we?
We sure did.
Yeah. How many Olympics have there been?
I think the first one was like 1898, the first official modern day ones. Yeah, okay. I think.
I mean, if you're talking spin-offs as well, there might actually be more Final Fantasy games.
Yeah,
true.
I'm going to look this up. Give us a minute here to just...
Okay. Well, while you tap away, we've done another YouTube video. Fucking hell. Surprise, surprise. The boys are at it again. They like making videos, and we made one where Nox was the pilot. Tommy and I were the little babies strapped in our booster seats, and we took a little trip from Melbourne to Tokyo, and it was really, really fun. We obviously, this was on Microsoft Flight Simulator. I feel like I didn't mention that yet. This was not in real life. And we flew around Melbourne, went to like all our childhood homes and flew around, pointed out some landmarks. And then, we zipped up to Tokyo. It was really, really fun.
I went into the cockpit and Adam asked me if I've ever seen a grown man naked.
It was pretty funny, though. The way I said it was like classically funny.
You can check that out now on our YouTube channel along with, we've been doing videos. We've been doing like two videos a week. There's a bunch that we do for early access on Patreon, and then they show up on the public feed a week after that. But we also just do a little kind of, we try and do like a sort of topical themed sort of video every week.
Man, Final Fantasy has the Olympic Games fucking crushed.
Oh, wow.
So, okay, are we talking just the Summer Olympics or total? If we're going to count spin-offs, we should count Winter Olympics too.
I guess, so just double it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got 28 Summer Olympic Games and 23 Winter Olympic Games.
Oh, okay.
So what's that? Okay. 51 games.
Right.
Okay. Is that what we're talking? No, it's got to be more than that. No, it is that.
No,
51.
Yeah.
That I've done the maths right now.
But are you going to count the X Games and the Commonwealth Games?
And the Paralympics.
Paralympics.
You got to count the Paralympics.
In parallel to the regular Olympics, though, the Summer Olympics.
I know. That's true.
I guess. Okay. Well, that's going to
The Paralympics are kind of an event. They're sort of. Yeah, they are under the umbrella of the main Olympics, essentially.
I wouldn't count them in the same way. I wouldn't count the re-releases or the remakes of Final Fantasy games.
Yeah, or DLC. The Paralympics are kind of like Olympics DLC.
Right, because Final Fantasy VII on the PC is the Paralympics to Final Fantasy VII on the PS1.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Yep, okay.
Just different categories.
Okay.
Yep.
That's
which
fair.
Which means that if we are excluding... re-releases, I believe the number of Final Fantasy games in total is somewhere around 103.
Wow.
So Final Fantasy is twice as good as the Olympics.
I was going to say, it's doubly valid. It should be televised every 4 years.
I mean, somehow. That's kind of the release schedule they're on at the moment. So that's pretty much.
Yeah.
And then,
Final
Fantasy 15 was the Tokyo Olympics of Final Fantasy, where it just like it was meant to come out, but fuck me, it took a long time, and maybe it shouldn't have come out in the manner in which it did.
Mm. Really weird how half of the Olympics was released as a weird movie that you had to watch to get it.
And they cancelled at the end of the Olympics that they announced were going to happen, but whatever.
We could still happen.
We combined the Olympics and Final Fantasy by flying to Tokyo, the home of Final Fantasy, I guess, and the Olympics. But yeah, that's up there. Last week we did the worst Zelda game of all time, ? It was one of the Philips CD-i games. That was really fun. Mm-hmm. We've done a bunch of shit. Space Jam games from the 90s and today. And we've actually finished our our recording of Operation Tango. That'll be going up over the next couple of weeks, the final two parts. Really fun co-op game, which I think we've already said, but yeah, can't emphasize enough. It was really, really sick, really fun experience.
Yeah, if you're in lockdown, you got a buddy in lockdown. Mm. Great thing to kill an evening with.
Yeah.
YouTube.com is the website. And then you That's can type it. / filthy casuals if you want to. You don't have to put the C in there, apparently. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
In term Flight Simulator, what's speaking about too, that's come out on the Xbox Series X and S. And the Xbox Series X version is the one I've played out of those two. And it's good. It runs. Mm. It looks good. Mm. It's pretty crazy that they were able to cram it in there because it does require a demanding PC. Or it is demanding. It requires... It is highly demanding of the PC that it requires. I don't know how to phrase that sentence. I recorded this in Japanese first, and now I'm translating it, and it's not coming out.
It essentially uses like 90% of the capacity of your PC's power. Like it will the propeller, your graphics card fan will sound like an airplane propeller, basically.
Yeah, it doesn't even have the sound effect put in for the propellers of the planes that have them. They just do like the old IBM PCs where all the bleeps and bloops would come out of the computer itself.
Yes.
It's similar to that.
Yes.
It's kind of running it at like upper medium settings sort of thing. But the resolution is, I believe, at 4K around there. And it looks great and it runs pretty well when you're not fucking with it by doing the slew mode and flying around faster than you expect to plane
into space. Yeah, I was going to say, you summed it up well, Adam, when you went up into space and then it hitched up a little bit and you said, look, it's slowed down a bit here, but to be fair, that's only because I'm making it render the entire world all at once by being up in space.
Yeah, I'm impressed with it and it is free on Game Pass and it is just such a relaxing game and especially... good to me as a Google Maps viewer kind of
interactive Google Maps. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really looks nice as that. Speaking of Game Pass, I saw this article before, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I've fully understood it.
All right. But let's pass this out together. Let's sound it out.
Okay. Sony.
Okay.
That's first bit I have a problem with. What does that mean?
Right. They make televisions, I think, most famously.
Well, I have a remote control by Sony.
Oh, the Walkman. They make the Walkman.
Right. Okay. Yep. Now I get what you're saying. No, they are. So MLB The Show 21 has been the MLB The Show series has been Sony exclusive for a long time. I believe it is made by Sony or like a development team that is like a second party studio or whatever you call it for Sony.
Yeah. MLB 21, nothing on even the Olympics, just 21.
Yep.
Yep.
Just the number 21 for the year it comes out in. And it's got the decency to number its year after the actual year that it comes out.
Mm.
It came out and it came out on the Xbox as well for the first time, I believe.
Yeah.
Which was pretty weird. Because it's a Sony published game on an Xbox.
Yep.
It was free on Game Pass day one. And I believe that has matched the number of people who've bought it on the PS5. That is 4 and 5, maybe. Maybe just 5.
Yeah, right.
But it has done very well there, matching the exact level, it seems. So it sold 2 million copies, but it has had 4 million players.
And it was released on PlayStation first, right? Game Pass was not before PS. Because, like, obviously, if they drop at the same time and it's on Game Pass, then you'd imagine that would skew even more heavily in favor of Game Pass. But there must have been a few months of exclusivity, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think there was. I think it came out at the same time on both. Let me have a look here and make sure of that. But I'm pretty sure it just showed up for both at the same time.
I'm
going to go double check that right now.
Yeah, you better not be sucking our dicks over here.
Yeah, no, 20th of April.
Wow.
Yeah, buddy. And it came out on everything at once, PS4, 5, and Xbox One, and Series X and S. So
that's okay. Wow.
For a Sony developed thing, so if you were really in on baseball, you'd already be in on PlayStation probably because this is where what has been for a long time regarded as the best baseball game has been.
Yeah.
It just is a cool way of measuring how things perform on both platforms directly. Like that information doesn't come out. Microsoft doesn't share how well Game Pass does and is pretty cagey about how the money works and all that sort of stuff.
Same as Netflix, right? They don't really release ratings or anything like that.
Right. And this one, because it's a Sony thing, they're like, nah, we don't care. We'll fucking tell you.
Yeah.
And it's the same, which is really surprising to me. And
right. Based on, literally what I just said, what I assumed would have been the result, it is not the case. People bought it on PlayStation. They didn't get it, quote unquote, for free, for a subscription price on Game Pass in a rate any higher than someone paying $70 for it.
Yes, but I would assume that a lot of those sales came from people who already had a PS4 and didn't have any Xbox.
I think that's people not having an Xbox and they're into that series, so they've made their choice. They've got one console and they've got the PlayStation because they want to play this series. And to me, it's not ungood that happened. Like, it's not...
it's not...
I finally there a word for ungood.
I was going to say uncool, and then at the last minute I was like, well, I don't think it's cool, or I don't think it's cool is the right metric to be using. It's more, it's like, it's on there, and it's like, yeah, a lot of people got it because they've heard about this series, and it's probably the inverse is true, where a lot of people that have Xboxes because they're, they've never cared too much about that franchise or the exclusives. It's like, oh, let's give this a try. I mean, when you consider the fact that you can just get anything on Game Pass to just download it and have a crack at it just for the sake of it, it makes it a bit less, I guess, quantifiable of how much of a measure of success that really is for a game.
But so here's the thing. Those 2 million sales, so it sold 2 million and had 4 million players. Those 2 million sales are of every version. So that's PS4, 5, and the actual buyable copies on the Xbox too.
Right,
so out of of the sold versions, that number has been matched by people who gave it a shot on Game Pass. So the fact that, the PS4 has way, still the high, this was all in a thing about how well the PS5 is doing and it sold 10 million copies. The fact that the PS4 would be the best-selling platform for that game, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
And then it would probably go PS5? And then the Xboxes would be my guess, because why wouldn't you get it on Game Pass if you had an Xbox?
Yeah,
that's just interesting to me that it is that much penetration of the market.
Yeah.
What would be interesting to know is how many people have Game Pass, because then you can understand a bit more like what the percentage is of people that I have feel access like to been, it and have decided to go in.
I feel like that number has been released. If you want to keep doing the research, Knox, I feel like the total number of Game Pass people, it might have been like released at a end of last year or something. Like, it's not constantly available. It's not on a chart.
Hey, this is perfect. So the report is from as of the 20th of April 2021, which is the day that game came out. Okay. So on the day that MLB 2021 came out, they had 23 million subscribers. So
right,
whatever percentage that is. Less like than 10? 10.
Less than 10,
8.75%, something like that.
Wow, we're really doing some investigative journalism here.
Man, this is crazy. Yeah, let's not dig too deep into doing investigative journalism in the world of video games just at the moment, because we could get real depressing and horrible real quick. But I just find that interesting that there's a way of measuring that. Like, this has happened with Netflix sometimes as well, where it's been like, we found out! We got it!
Yeah.
So yeah, it seems like Game Pass continues to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also physical sales or, sales, right? Because even if of the 4 million, was it 2 million sales?
2 million sales, 4 million players.
2 million physical sales, like if 1 million of those is on the PS4, which it's reasonable to guess maybe, given
like
the PS4's dominance.
I reckon, yeah.
Like that's a fuck ton of money. That's heaps for Sony. And then Sony get a cut of physical sales on Xbox and they would have been paid. We don't know this for sure, but all the stuff I've read and heard from developers is that you get paid a certain amount to have your game on Game Pass, and then you get tiny royalties or something like that. Milestones you have to hit, I think. This is also good for Sony. Sony is a game developer.
Yeah. I still don't really get how Game Pass makes anyone money. I mean, it makes Microsoft money because you've got subscribers coming in. I guess if you're into baseball, MLB The Show being on there is a big deal. If you've always had an Xbox and been like, oh man, I wish I could play that game.
Which is not unreasonable, because Xbox is a great thing to own if you have Game Pass and EA Play. Man. EA Play? No, what's it called? EA?
Yeah, is
it? I think it's EA Play, isn't it?
Yeah, because you get like Madden and FIFA. Like, you get all those EA games.
If you're into that stuff, yeah. So it is a good hub for sports stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. Someone
as well.
Someone else figure out the money stuff. Someone will do it. Someone will figure out exactly.
They're just in their Scrooge McDuck style with a big vault full of money. I'm like, how can we distribute this around? I just don't know how to make it happen. Well, speaking of Sony selling 10 million PlayStation 5s.
Mm.
So speaking of hardware coming out that I definitely would like to own, the Playdate.
Yes.
If you're listening to this hot off the presses, I think pre-orders will be going live very soon, very, very inconveniently. What did we work out? It's 3 a.m. Melbourne time, and they're not going to cut you off, but when you pre-order will determine when you get it. And I want this fucking thing hot off the presses. I'm more into this than the Switch OLED. Not that that's saying much. I'm more into it than the Steam Deck. I don't want to be getting up at 3. I don't want to set an alarm for 3 a.m. to
too pre-order fucking bad.
This damn thing. Fuck, it's so annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, whatever, though. I mean, you can just... It's cool that the way they're doing it is by putting you in a queue, but also that who knows how long that queue is going to be. So maybe that means you pay for something now and then you get it in 2023.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm tempted to just go, look at, what's the big difference? I'll just get up at 8, 7 or 8 in the morning. But that's enough hours that it's like, if this really reeks of something that's like, because we talked about that reveal trailer they did, it was so impressive that it really reeks of something that's going to end up being way more popular than they're anticipating. I can see it being a thing where the pre-order thing, crashes as soon as it goes up and all that kind of stuff. But just thought I'd put that in there if you're listening to this very quickly and if you were interested in that when it got announced. Set your alarm or get ready to do whatever you've got to do in a few hours, because it'll be going live very shortly.
Well, we all got up. Did we all get up? I think I was getting up because I had work, but we all got up super early and got... That's why we have PS5s. We didn't just be like, oh, I'm sure, if we jump on at lunchtime, we'll be able to get one. It's not like they're going to sell out. We all got it at like 9 a.m. as soon as it was available.
No, I was a little late.
A little late?
Yeah, I...
Oh, what happened was that some stores had not... Like, it was sort of staggered, right? Because, like, Nox and I, did we both get EB games?
We were watching at the time when the announcement video was going up, and it was just on early.
Right,
and they happened to be like, oh, yeah, and you can start buying, pre-orders will go up soon. It was a mess. Everything is a bit of a mess at the moment for pre-order stuff. Like, video cards are still a nightmare.
Yeah.
But whatever, it's just objects. You can't take them with you.
I think you can,
a Playdate's portable.
Nah.
It's a little mobile console.
Not allowed.
What? I think I got on Amazon, but they were like not guaranteeing it or something weird like that, I think was what it ended up being. Because I watched the presentation like an hour after it had been on and was like, oh, great, okay, I'll get on and pre-order this now. And it was like already too late for like JB Hi-Fi.
Yeah, these consoles are going to keep selling well for a long time, because if they're both Microsoft and Sony being like, these are the fastest selling things we've ever done by a mile.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you still see heaps more people than seem to have them be like, we can't get them.
Mm.
Yep.
Which is nuts. You know what you can get is a little bit of hygiene for your face and your body. Mainly your body.
Yeah. Oh, no, not mainly. Well, I guess it depends what your preference is. I like to keep my ears and nose very well trimmed. But my anus, I let flourish.
I was kind of just talking in terms of surface area.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, sure.
We're not going cavities quite yet, are we?
I don't know what we're doing with Manscaped.
Well, let me tell you this, boys. And I don't need to, because I know that that the Olympics are happening. We all know the Olympics are on because we mentioned it earlier. But you know what else is on? A bunch of other shit. The Euros happened. In the Northern Hemisphere, it's beautiful summer. Down south, it's beautiful winter. And you know what is not beautiful? A wild, hairy bush of pubes.
Depends who you ask. But
true.
You know, everyone has their preference. You know what's going to hold bacteria more?
Mm.
A little petri dish. But also pubes, possibly.
Well, if you ask me, you should tame that hairy bush with the help of our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Their third-generation performance package, that means it's gotten better with each generation, unlike the royal family.
Yeah, exactly. That's not always necessarily the trend.
But with technology, quite frequently it is. You iterate, you improve.
Yeah, tech generally.
Mm.
Yeah.
And if it, look, here's a rhetorical question for you. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, wow, that was, I didn't know that was in the copy when I made that. Okay, if an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your pubes like Olympic gold?
Mm, okay.
Okay, I love shaving my medals.
Put them around your neck.
Be never
proud
be able to
get
of
them.
I guess.
Yeah.
But fellas, boys, do right by your balls and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. That's as many men as bought MLB the Show physically. Unless some women bought MLB the Show physically.
Which you would assume. And also you can assume. You know, women have pubes. So
that's the other thing. Yeah, that's true. This is called Manscaped, but it also is called Womanscaped.
Mm. Well, it isn't.
No, but I scratched a W and O onto my razor.
Their positioning statement doesn't necessarily dictate how you have to use the product.
Sure, no. If it's just a good razor, electric razor, then fuck, anyone can use it. But yes, you can dive in on the Manscaped experience by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping when you get the performance package by using the code FILTHY. Filthy sounds like it would be the opposite of what you want when you use a Manscaped product, and it is. Mm. So we apologize for that confusion.
Well, that's how you remember the code. You think about it looks like down there.
And you type it in.
Type that in. Yeah.
So use the code GORGEOUS today to get 20% off. No, do use filthy. Gonna, and you get 20% off.
Use the code MICRO.
Yeah, I use the code WTF because I'm a fan of Marin. But manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping. It's a crazy deal when a lot of people are sort of hesitant to leave the house around the world at this time for good reason. Yep. Free shipping by itself is sick, and 20% off, even better. So manscaped.com. Code a filthy.
Speaking of good deals, the $30 I spent on Death's Door is some of the best money I've spent on a game in a long time.
Oh, now that is big pull quote right out of the gates of the review.
He's whipped out his Manscaped balls and laid them on the table here. Ba-boom.
Go-gunk.
That's a big call. Interesting.
I'm loving. So I think we've all played at least a bit of this. I've finished the main part of it, and I'm doing the extra stuff now after it finishes, which is great. Yeah. It's called Death's Door. Once again, it's out on Xbox Series S and X and on the PC, and I fucking love it.
Yeah, I'm about 6 hours in. I think it's fair to say that this was not on really any of our radars until like last week. I certainly didn't know really anything about the. I hadn't seen it. I don't know if this got shown at E3 or anything, but I hadn't seen any pre-release stuff. And to be honest, even if I had it to me, it was like the hearing the glowing stuff about it really was what made me interested. Yes. Friend of the show Andrew Levins got it an advanced copy of it and was raving about it. And I think if I had have just gone on how it looked, I might have been a bit put off because it looks a bit. Sort of looks like it's going to be a roguelite or a just one of those like over the top, kind of very punishing, grueling kind of games, and it's not either of those things at all.
Well, and even the actual pitch is not unique. It's kind of a Zelda game,
yeah,
and it's sort of a Metroidvania type of thing. It is a isometric, puzzle-y, combat-y, top-down-y kind of game. It is not unique in the world of indie games, but it is just doing it really, really fucking well. Are you particularly far in, Ben?
I'm 2 hours in. I'm into, it's not really a spoiler. I'm in the mansion. I'm inside the mansion. Okay. So, yeah.
You're in the guts of it, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just, you're dipping your toe in the real bits of it now.
Yeah, because it seems like, yeah, I don't want to, I don't know, I don't know how much you can spoil it, but it's sort of similar to Resident Evil 8 of like a bunch of areas you go to. The story is extremely vague itself, so that's why I feel like it's I don't want to spoil the things that happen, but there's not much of a narrative, it feels like, to spoil.
There is by the end. I think by the end of the game, I came to really enjoy what it was doing with the story, that it builds it over time. It is a lot like a Resident Evil 8 or any game like that, that kind of structure, like a Zelda game again, where you are going to different areas and going to find new items to give you different abilities to get through different types of doors.
What was that Zelda game that was remastered and it was one of these top-down ones? Link's Awakening. So that I played all the way through to the end when it came out a few years ago now. And yeah, having not played any other Zelda games except for like the first one for half an hour, it feels like that. It feels like that reskinned almost. I don't think you need to say Metroidvania, right? Because this is what Zelda's always been. It's like you go to one area and there's like, oh, there's a wall there made up of like big boulders. And you're like, oh, I can't seem to break that or get through. And then you come back when you got the boulder breaker and you smash down there and you go to the new area. It's that exact sort of formula.
Yeah, it is. Just because it's like this sort of style of indie game and towards the back end, it starts doing more of the... like, okay, now try and figure out this environmental puzzle. Like, it is, I really like the way that it's put together in that it has this main thrust and this main sort of story that you kind of go through. And then it really does a good job of incorporating the extra stuff into the sort of post-game thing, which is the bit I'm doing now, which I'm really enjoying. And I tore through this and ate it up. I really, really enjoyed the combat, which is simple but kind of difficult at points, and it builds layers and layers of abilities onto it as you go through, so it gets a little more complex and throws more and more difficult enemies at you as you go on. It just it feels really satisfying with a cool look and fucking fantastic music.
Yeah, it feels to me like the people making it really have a deep, deep love for those classic Zeldas. Mm. But their big takeaway was that the combat in Zelda games is always quite simple. It's just like you swing your sword, especially in those top-down ones. Mm. You swing your sword and that's it. So they went, what if you had a game that is that puts more of an emphasis on the combat and the actually having to have like... yeah, a bit more skill and a bit more tools at your disposal, mixed with these very, very intricate dungeons, which when you first get into them seem very overwhelming, and then you start to piece it together and you come out of a little door and you're in the bit that was locked that you could see earlier, and you start to get an overall sense of how it all kind of fits in. It's just that mechanic for me is like some of my favorite stuff in any game. So yeah, I'm the same as you, Adam. I just almost pretty immediately like gobbled it right up.
Yeah, because it's not, the combat isn't crazy elaborate. Like, it's basically Zelda combat, but you got to roll, and so like the enemies are a little more aggressive, and you got like a Dark Souls roll, but it works really well and it's super fucking satisfying. And the further and further into it and the more complex the combat challenges get, I just never hit a point where I wasn't enjoying that.
Yeah, sorry, when I say more intricate, it feels more that the enemies that you're taking on, because there's in terms of like the bosses are very interestingly designed, and I've only done one of them, but it was pretty tough. Took me quite a few goes to beat it. But even just like the range of enemies that you just meet that you come across in the dungeons and stuff, there's like a lot of different types of them that have a lot of different attacks and intricacies that you kind of have to learn, which again, you sort of don't really get in the Zelda games as much, I don't feel like,
not to this extent.
So it's like, that's really satisfying where you start to learn like, oh, right, okay, this one's going to, when it sees me, it's going to roll at me, but then it knocks itself out and I can, you know, go in and cut loose on it. All that kind of stuff.
That is the satisfying thing that this game does really well with every aspect of it, is that it's about learning. Like, there's not a map for any of the areas at all. So you are learning how they're put together by actually physically moving around them. And it can be a little disorienting and confusing early on, but the feeling of going, oh shit, I know where I am now. I've got to move over here. And then I know where this thing that I couldn't get past before is. It's really cool. And the levels are designed well enough that they have that sense of overwhelming, making you feel lost when you're first there. And then you're able to piece it together by the time you've been there for a while.
Yeah. Which is cool. And you do, like, you'll die and then you... So just to give a very broad strokes description of what's actually happening in the game, you're a Reaper who's traveling around trying
little
to find
magpie
souls.
Crow guy.
Little crow slash Reaper. So you have these doors that are dotted throughout the levels that will take you back to this kind of hub. And so every time you die, you reset at the last door that you found. So like quite often if you're dying, like in a dungeon or as you're making your way through the kind of world to get to the dungeon, you then will have to, work your way back to where you were. Like, so you get to learn the terrain very well just even through doing that. So it does have a bit of that sort of roguelite-y thing of the like reset and the start again, but it's not, it's not procedurally generated or anything like that. But no. It's very well designed and the tone and the aesthetic is cool. It's a weird little idea that you're a Reaper and all the Reapers in this world are crows. And I really like the weird sort of setup of it and the weird vibe of it and the tone.
And it does dig further into it as you go.
I did not like this game at all. I disagree about just about everything that both of you guys have said. I really find the music annoying. I hate that there's no map. I constantly get lost. The backtracking is frustrating. I wish there were more checkpoints. I constantly die. I find there's only 4 health points, so it's just 4 hits and you die. The healing is really sporadic. There's just like you pick up one thing, an item as you're going around, and then there'll be these permanently located like pots where you go put the item in and then heal. But yeah, they're pretty spaced out. I think it's the backtracking that's really annoying me the most. But yeah, I think like the start of the game is like you dropped right in. Like there's absolutely no explanation. Right. And then, I don't feel like the call to arms or the call to adventure is particularly engaging. I think because the raven or the crow, whatever, has no personality. I just feel like I have nothing to hang on to with this game. I feel sort of lost constantly. And the combat, like I've played, people have compared it a bit to Hades. But it's probably closer to Bastion, the previous game by those guys, where, it's hack and slash, isometric, and you do have a dodge roll, I think, in Bastion. But there's sort of a moment after you roll where you're vulnerable and you're not quite back up to speed yet. So it is, like a Dark Souls or something like that, where it's about timing and hitting and not being impatient. But, I don't know, like the levels are pretty empty feeling. The story, this just doesn't feel like this really strong, really cohesive, driving, point of view at this point. And like I said, I'm probably, a quarter of the way through if I'm barreling
less.
Through the story.
Probably less.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just not clicking for me at all in basically any respect.
I definitely wasn't as locked in on it as I am now. Like it takes a while in the way that these games do sometimes, but I do agree that it's kind of to the game's detriment early on, that it takes a while for you to be in it enough or like good enough at the combat and sort of familiar enough with the world and the your abilities within it to get the most out of this game. Like it definitely is revealing itself. It's taking its time.
Yeah, it does a few kind of different sort of steps of like it drops you in and you're sort of doing a thing and you go, okay, I guess this is the game, and then it pulls the rug out from under you. And it sort of does that a few times that it took me, I think it's really only like until halfway through the bit that you're up to, Ben, where it really started to gel for me and I really felt comfortable in it and went, okay, I don't think it's going to pull the rug from under me again. I think I'm actually in the game proper now. Like, it does spend the first maybe 90 minutes, like, sort of, it feels like the carrot is always just kind of moving where you're like, okay, so is this what I'm doing now?
I think that's what I'm not getting, is like, what is the point? Like, there's a bit, there's sort of an intro bit and then a bit of a surprising bit and then you're sort of dropped into a level and it was like, there's no map, there's no quest marker, the character I'm playing is not a character, you know, they don't speak, they don't have a personality, they're just a crow. I was like, what, like, why am I playing this game? And initially, like, it's probably like, oh, maybe you like this kind of combat, but that wasn't really gelling. And I was just like, okay, I guess I'll just keep playing to see how far I can get, you know, like that. But that's, yeah, again, where I'm up to in the game.
Yeah, the checkpoint things, I will say, they become a lot more generously spaced out. Because again, in that early bit, it's like they're very sporadic because, again, it's about to pull the rug out from under you again. So it's like you're not really in the game proper. Like, I have found that the bit that I'm into now, like the second world, it's, they're becoming a lot more kind of spaced out. And I do, to explain a bit better how that works, yeah, you pick up just a bit more detailed, like you find these seeds that you, to get to regenerate health, you have to plant them in a planter box. So that creates a thing where, yeah, do you use this now or do you hold on to it? Like, I kind of like that as a change of pace from the approach of just, you find this pickup and now you've got your full health back. Like, you find the pickup, but then you've got to also find the second thing to kind of plant it in and be strategic about it.
Right.
And then when you use it, it's done. But then if you die, it regenerates. So if you're back in that area and you're having a tough fight or whatever, it's now there and you can use it again. You've now planted a little tree that'll kind of respawn every time you die.
And I think as you get used to the combat and get more abilities and you get stronger by, like, you're finding these, they're literally called souls, and you're upgrading your abilities by using them, that stuff does become more and more satisfying, or it did for me, because I think that it does take a while for it to properly show itself for all of the positives that this game does have. Like, as in terms of the structure of it, at least, like, I think that if you find the music annoying now, then you're not going to like it. But
I will say that is easily my least favorite thing about the game. I really, for my tastes, I don't like the music at all. I'm not saying it's bad. It's competently done. It's just, for my tastes, it's just a bit like, it's a bit, I don't know, I've been trying to think all week for the word I'd use for it. It's twee, or it's like, it's not a quality thing. It's just absolutely not to my tastes.
I think it's
twinkly, piano-y kind of stuff. It just doesn't work for me. I think it's very competently done and I don't necessarily think it's bad and it doesn't not match the tone. It's just not to my tastes.
With the boss fights especially, I think it does, it's doing like very sort of classic video gamey type of music, but, you know, orchestrated and whatever. And it has some stuff it does with timing that I think is really cool. But yeah, obviously that's a subjective thing. I do think the visuals, they look nice, but they're like pretty, they're not as full of personality as I think the game treats them like they are, if that makes sense.
I think the boss designs are cool. Like, the boss designs are because great. Because they're so big and again, this isn't really a spoiler, but there'll be a thing where you're in the area that you're in, the boss character will kind of keep showing up and sort of talking to you, which is kind of a nice, like, I like the kind of foreshadowing thing of that where they'll kind of like poke out of a window and be like, get the fuck out of here or whatever. And they've got these kind of neat sort of Ghibli-ish designs,
right?
But they're far and away, like, they look great, but then everything else is, again, for my taste, it's verging on it. It's a little generic. It's a little kind of lacking in flair. Whereas the bosses are so kind of creative and interesting.
I don't know what it is about it, but the whole time I've been playing it, it feels like this is like a GameCube game that didn't do well at the time.
Yeah.
That has a remaster now. I don't know why it's specifically a GameCube game, but that what is what it feels like. It's like some old 2003 GameCube game.
No, I have that same feeling about it. It's like, yeah, niche, kind of cult classic from back in the day that, like, you know, maybe it was, you know, every like fourth video store had like one copy of it for rental, and most people would look at it on the shelves and go, I'm not rolling the dice on that. But then, and you if know, you play had it one for friend who borrowed it and went, this is fucking actually pretty cool.
If you play it for a couple of hours, you might not be that into it, because like I did, it was clicking with me enough that like I guess I felt that slow burn happening and was going along with it.
Right, yeah. And I guess also because, yeah, like I said before, the only Zelda game of this kind I played was a remaster of one that I played a couple of years ago.
Right.
And it was cool, but I think I bought in because it was a Zelda game and everyone said it was great. And right. I gave it, you know, that I gave it, yeah, some space to breathe. And I gave it a lot of time and energy, and I ended up really, really loving it a lot. Mm. So I don't necessarily have like years of loving this kind of game to be like, yeah, I'll see where this goes.
Sure.
Yeah, you're not the target for it who's like, wouldn't it be great if they made another like classic top-down dungeon-y Zelda, which yeah, I was actually just, you know, I was thinking about Link's Awakening last month and was like, oh, maybe I should go in on one of the old like Game Boy ones that I never played, or the Game Boy Color ones, or and then this comes along and it's like, this is absolutely the itch that I wanted scratched. Like, this is this is doing all that shit that I was looking to play last month. So,
because also having like, I think I've played every Zelda game. Like, I love those games, and it means that with something like this, I can see that structure forming.
Mm.
So it's easier for me to wait for it to pay off, which it does. I really think that the payoff of this game, all the little secrets that you, you know, slowly realize were there the whole time type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think this game does that stuff really well. Like, I'm enjoying I'm going to probably do all of it. Like, I'm enjoying that, but it means I have that. I know that that's coming maybe a little more easily. Because
right. You
I've
have
seen
more
it before.
Patience for it. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause like that, think- that, everyone enjoys that. But if you just did da-da-da, then you're like, who cares? But if you know da-da-da-da-da-da is coming, then you're going to wait for that trombone to finish its shit.
And I don't think that like you said, Tommy, I'm not someone who identifies as liking this kind of game. I just happen to like that one Zelda game that I played recently.
Yeah,
and Breath of the Wild, but that's
and Breath of the Wild, that's yeah, and you know there are mechanical things that are, you know, very similar in Death's Door, and like, you know, I like how where it sets up very simple, you know, where I'm up to like puzzles of like shoot the arrow through the fire and shit like that, and be like, okay,
yeah,
I see that this will probably escalate at some point, and oh, there's like a million fires that look like they could be lit. Well, is this gonna, you know, and so I like all of that stuff in the other game of this type that I played. But it's, yeah, I don't know. I love the aesthetic of Link's Awakening, and I don't like the aesthetic of this. I think, yeah, it's a little, it lacks flair. It lacks polish, which I also heard this was a tiny team that made this. People keep saying two people, but other people keep saying, what about all of the other contractors they hired? So it's like
It's more than two people, but it's like two main people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, with that in mind, it's impressive, but without that in mind, like the menus and some things are a little like, oh, that's pretty bare bones. But yeah, I don't think it's even the menus or the
bits of it are a bit crude, but it's also like it's cool that like in terms of like setting up the world, they have kind of gone for it with this weird like personal because again, it's like if I had the choice of playing this or this with a Zelda skin on it would be, you know, heaven, because it's like that style is definitely like still my preferred kind of vibe and tone. Like, this hasn't like, you know, taken over that for me. But I also think it's cool that they sort of went for it and had this weird idea of like, yeah, you're the Grim Reaper, but he's also a crow. Like, it, rather than just be like, oh, we've made him a little adventurer and he's a, you know, he's a little blonde boy who lives in the woods. Like, they've sort of gone, okay, well, we can't just, we're using this kind of template for the gameplay. We can't just, you know, have it set in a, you know, have him be a magical fantasy guy who's right. hunting a dragon or whatever. Like, let's try and come up with something that's a bit, you know, that's like a bit offbeat and a bit sort of weird. And I, you know, I like the fact that they've at least had a go at, but then the environments themselves end up being, yeah, kind of
a little, but I do also think that that stuff is good in this. I don't think it's bad the way it looks. I think that it does a good job, but it's not like gonna match something that is made with a bigger budget and a bigger scope, but I don't think it looks bad, and I don't think the art style or like what they do with it, there's some inventive stuff it does, especially later on with how it looks, you know, not crazy over the top but cool stuff. And yeah, I it just didn't bother me. I liked the music, and I the graphics are good.
Oh, technically it's all fine, and technically it's great, but yeah, we're talking stylistically.
No, and I mean that is good. I think the style is still good.
Yeah.
I think there's, I think there's like enough in like the characters that you meet as well. Like, you meet these sort of like NPCs along the way that kind of chat to you, and some of them are kind of interesting and weird. It's got, I mean, it does, yeah, that's not to say that it's all bland. There's bits of it that I wish it went as hard in those areas as it does in the other areas. Like, I really like that when you die, it comes up with the way that it comes up with like death in this kind of like big block of text where it's like the screen is kind of cut out. Like, stylistically, I think that looks really cool, and that's really well done, and doesn't just like fade and reset you. Like, it's got these like really, it does have a bunch of really nice little touches in it. I also like the way your magic recharges is a nice little mechanic that we haven't talked about yet. So you have four little slots of magic that you can use, and the way that you recharge them is
you
by
upgrade
using
these,
your melee.
The health and the magic as you go, by the way. Oh,
right.
Pointing out, you get these little things.
And your speed, right? And something else.
And your speed, but like, you find things in the world that give you, they're like heart pieces in Zelda.
That give you more, right. But yes, yeah, the way that you recharge them is by using your melee attacks. So yeah, so you can't just hang back in battles and shoot fire at something. You can do that a few times, but then if you want to recharge it, you're going to have to get up close and take some risks and take some shots at them at actual close range. And it's a nice little interplay. It's a nice little dynamic.
Yeah, that is a
bosses,
smart.
Bosses will have little mechanic. Bits where they're, you know, they're giving you a little in where they're a bit kind of immobile, so you can get up and you can get close and you can get yourself ready for taking some ranged attacks, because it's going to be throwing ranged attacks at you. It's like all the design of that stuff is really well done.
Well, we got all three views here. I love it. Ben doesn't like it. Tommy seems to be somewhere in the middle.
No, I love it. I'm no, I am loving it. I genuinely do love it. I'm only being it's like there's certain bits of the aesthetic that aren't 100% to my taste, but it speaks to the quality of all the rest of it that's not, you know, it's not really bothering me. I'm just bringing it up for the sake of, you know, giving it.
That's interesting because
that's my taste, but it hasn't put me off at all.
It's interesting because I think like the only things about it that I feel strongly negative about are the aesthetic and stylistic things, which I feel like for a game like this are the only reasons that you latch on or don't. Because it's like, yeah, mechanically there have been a bunch of games similar to it. So it's interesting that you're like, no, I like playing it. I'm just not overly taken by how it looks and sounds.
I think the way that it plays is towards the upper end of what games that are of this style have done.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I think I'm more like, when we talked at the start about like seeing it in pictures and stuff probably wouldn't have won me over. It sort of didn't really. And it's like when I think about those elements of it that aren't 100% to my tastes when I'm not playing it, I can be, you know, critical about them. But then once I'm in it and I'm actually playing it, I'm loving all that stuff. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, I love the thrust of the story. And I think this is a very deliberate stylistic thing based on what they're, you know, the kind of game that they're trying to mirror. But him being a mute character who doesn't have any personality, I mean, that's generally Link in those early games. Like, he doesn't speak or do anything. So I think they've deliberately tried to make him that. And I like him as a little character.
Yeah, that's
like,
not putting me off at all.
Yeah, I do like all that stuff. It's just more when I think about the sort of art styles that I like more when I'm away from it. I can think, oh yeah, I probably do like that sort of stuff a bit more. But yeah, when I'm in it, I'm fucking absolutely loving it. And again, if you've liked any of the classic Zeldas, I mean, Breath of the Wild doesn't really do it, but like all the other ones, if you've liked those kinds of dungeons, I think this is if you have access to it, if you have a PC or a Xbox, then it's a no-brainer. You got to check this one out, and I think it's gaining a bit of momentum, but I haven't really seen it get too much. You know, it's gotten good reviews and everything, but I haven't seen it talked about heaps out there. So
I think it's great. And
they got, I think, 100,000 sales in the first week or so. So it's doing well for them, which is great.
It is great. The game is great. And you know who else is great? The Chronicle, well, not who, but the Chronicles of an Ace Attorney would be great.
Yes.
I definitely haven't played anywhere near as much of the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, which is a Switch and PC. I don't know what it's out on. And PS4. Compilation of two Ace Attorney games that only ever came out in Japan until now. This is the first time they've been translated, and they are set in like mid 19th century Japan with like a really cool, like, interesting time period and place that you don't see represented much. And they are Ace Attorney games up and down and in and out and through and through.
Yep. I played a little bit of one of them on the collection that came out on the Switch, what, like 2 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm 2 hours into this one, and yeah, it's if you've liked that kind of game before, or even if you had, I think this is a fine jumping off point.
It's a great one.
Yeah. I don't have like a deep attachment to it, so I'm going in, you know, relatively blind to it, and it still sets you up. It tells you, you know, everything that you need to know about how to play the game pretty early on. It doesn't like assume that you know everything and about these games.
If you've never played one, the Ace Attorney games are basically you're playing a lawyer, and you are going through and investigating these cases that you get by looking around rooms and finding evidence and then presenting that evidence in the right time of the trial is basically it. It's like a little adventure game. It's pretty set on the way that you do that. There's not a lot of, you know, you're figuring stuff out and trying to use logic to figure out what you need to do, but there is a thing you need to do, and the game will not let you do much else. So they're very linear in that way, kind of visual novel style of thing, a lot like the Famicom Detective Club games that we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you're not ever like moving around in an environment or anything like that. You're watching a story play out, and if it's not time for something to happen in that story in the courtroom yet, like, you won't be able to bring it up. It kind of
and it's like you're in these sort of static, you know, 2D rooms. And it's like at certain points of the game, it'll be like, okay, you can go from this room to this room, or, you know, this building to this building to this building. And you're trying to figure out blah, or you're trying to get extra information to help you figure out blah. So why don't you go look in the office? And then you look in a few things in the office and you read a couple of documents, and then you go back and talk to someone, and then they're like, oh, you read the thing. Well, here's, like, it just sort of, it's a real classic sort of detective-y, visually, novel-y sort of unfolding of information like that.
Yeah.
And then you present it all in the court at the right time. You go, hey, fuck you, I've got this bit of evidence. How about that?
You didn't see that coming, motherfucker.
And some cool music plays, and it looks fun, and they're enjoyable games. I think these are great. This is a fantastic jumping in point, because the setting is so unique and cool. In my opinion, this, like, Japan's just kind of opened its borders to the world. They're joining the global community in the 1800s, and they're kind of figuring out how to bring their legal system in line with the rest of the world. Like, they're figuring out law in this new world kind of way as they go. So it's an exciting time to be a cartoon lawyer.
Yeah.
The cases are very fun. The characters are well written and enjoyable.
The cases are, yeah, they're all interesting. It's a good, especially if you get it on the Switch, it's like a really good, like, play in bed. Like, do it in the space of time where you'd read a book before bed. Because right. for a lot of it, you are reading, and then you're having to make a little decision here and there. But you do, especially in the beginning of it, you spend a lot of time going through blocks of text. So you've got to, if you block out some time to kind of sit and just kind of take this in. Like, don't chuck it on if you want to, like, run around and do a couple levels for 15 minutes and then put it down. Like, just really settle in and treat it like you're chucking on a TV show or reading a book or watching a movie or whatever. Yeah. They're great. They're great end of the day. Just kind of unwind and watch a bit more of the story unfold.
And well done remasters as well. They've got, like, these kind of 3D animated characters. I don't know if this was in the original. I don't know what time span the original ones of these two in this era came out. But it from someone who's only ever played, like, the older DS games, which were then remakes of GBA games, it was all sort of 2D sprites and stuff like that. And seeing that translated into, like, these 3D models that move as though they are 2D animated, kind of, if that makes sense. It's a cool look, and the writing is great, because that's really all there is to the writing. There's a bit of music and cool visuals, but this game is living or dying by whether or not the case it's written for you is an interesting little murder mystery. And it is.
The animations are great, and there's so much personality in all the different things that come in. There's a bit early on where there's someone in the courtroom who is a British lady who doesn't speak Japanese, and they do a really nice thing where she starts speaking to the court, and the little block of text that comes up is like fake English, and does like a really nice thing where you go, wow, those do look like English characters, but what someone who can't read English would think when they're looking at it's really nicely done. It's like just having this like squiggly, you see like the little loops of the top of a lowercase a, but they're all kind of like, oh, that's cool, that's a neat little trick. And it's like everyone in the courtroom going, what the fuck is she saying? We don't speak English. It's like, can't, I'm reading it right now. You do speak English. You're speaking it to each other right now. Get your head out of your ass and solve this case, or you're going to jail.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I haven't played this one yet, but I played, that collection that came out a couple of years ago and fucking loved it. Really, really fun kind of game, and it sounds like this is, no exception.
It's exactly those sorts of games. But if you've never played one before, it's a good entry point, because it's not like it's tied in with all the others, because it's set in this completely different time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We better wrap it up for another week here on Filthy Casuals. Thank you very much for joining us. Head to filthycasuals.com.au. Get onto the Patreon. You can get a bonus episode every week of our sister show, Nintendo 69, where we talk about pop culture stuff that's not video games. We talk about movies, we talk about TV shows. Sometimes we just riff up a storm for half an hour or an hour or however long we feel like. It's they're always a lot of fun. A lot of fans of that out there. So get on and get yourself that. You can also get bonus access to some of the YouTube videos that we do. Head to the YouTube channel and see all the stuff we've done so far. Head to the Bandcamp. You can get the premium episodes that we've done in the past.
If you go to filthycasuals.com.au and just scroll down a bit on our homepage, there is a little thing about our live show in October, which is going ahead as planned in beautiful Melbourne. Just hit the buy now link there, get some tickets at, we'll be doing it at Comedy Republic on Bourke Street in the heart of Melbourne, a nice, nice big professional comedy theatre. So, come on down to that. Our last show that we did during Comedy Festival was super, super fun. We love seeing you people. Love having a drink with you. Love making you laugh and talking about video games. So, filthycasuals.com.au for that as well.
Yeah, check all that out, guys. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
in the British version of Death's Door, the Grim Reaper is called the Tim Reaper. Did you know that?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.